Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Well, I'm excited to hear your journey.
Yeah.
Well, hello there.
Hi there.
How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Good.
This is Judy. This is Dr. Karlfeldt.
Well, nice to meet you, Judy. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Of course. I'm happy to do it.
So tell me a little bit, where are you at now?
I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, so Midwest. I'm in the Midwest, prime state for tick-borne illness. One of the top, now I'm sounding like an encyclopedia, right? I'm going to start citing all my facts and, yeah, so that's where I live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lucky you. You picked the right spot.
Yep.
So how long have you been dealing with Lyme?
Well, you know, there's no way, of course, of knowing how long somebody has had it. That, to my understanding, you know, I wasn't diagnosed until 2017. I, however, feel, and my doctors feel, like this is something I've had for quite a while. Like, we're talking, you know, 20 plus years, possibly from childhood.
Wow.
You know, kind of in hindsight, looking back and thinking, oh, you know, there were just some things throughout my childhood, throughout my teens, you know, throughout my 20s. But, you know, I don't know for sure, but my gut tells me that this is not something that just, you know, a couple years just kind of happened. Mostly because of the severity of my symptoms and how it progressed. You know, there was always things that kind of explained certain symptoms I had based on, you know, my lifestyle. I was an athlete, or, you know, based on, you know, whatever I was going through, stress, trauma, whatever. And then, you know, based on the severity, you know, I would say it started to get pretty bad after the death of my father, and I was right around 38 years old. And shortly after that, which was approximately almost 14 years ago, was when, you know, it started to things really started to progress.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so sorry to hear, I mean, these kind of traumatic events, you know, like the loss of your father, I mean, that seems to be a triggering event for a lot of chronic illnesses in itself. You know, like, mm-hmm, fibromyalgia, for instance, we know that there is some kind of event, you know, like car accident or divorce or loss of somebody that can trigger it. And obviously, I would say fibromyalgia, if not everyone has, I'm sure pretty much every one of them has Lyme. So I'm curious, if you're saying that there were little kind of hints here and there mm-hmm, from your past that you know, thinking that maybe this has been going on since your childhood. I mean, what were some of those hints that you saw?
If you want me to go way back, I've had conversations. My mother is still alive, and I have had conversations about how when I was basically, you know, we're talking like 18 months to 2 years old, that I was constantly hospitalized. I had a fever every day. The doctors couldn't figure out what was going on. I couldn't sleep. I was very cranky. I couldn't eat. They, you know, did all kinds of tests. They couldn't figure out what was going on. And how my mom describes it is, I, you know, I almost died. But what really, I, looking back, it's like, okay, it's not normal to have a fever every day. You know, like kids get sick, right? But it's like ongoing for months and months and months. And I was just always really sick as a kid. You know, my immune system just wasn't functioning well, and they could never figure it out. And also, I had family. I know, obviously, this is a hot spot too where I live, but you're talking about Upper Wisconsin, which is where my mother's relatives were located, and we would make frequent trips up there. And they lived on a farm. And it's so it's like, yeah, you know, those are kind of all the red flags, right? It's like, you know, I was in northern Wisconsin. I farm, you know, animals, symptoms I had. And then, you know, in my teens, I had a lot of trouble with, you know, that's kind of, you know, it kind of, and again, I don't really remember a lot about my childhood, but I do remember, for whatever reason, you know, it evened out. And then, you know, when I was in high school, it's kind of like some of those symptoms came back again. So, and then, you know, evened out again, went to college. And usually, you know, looking back, it was always when there was some kind of a stressor in my life that seemed to kind of put my immune system into, you know, overdrive as far as functioning. So, you know, in my 20s, well, actually in my teens and my 20s, I was a cross country runner, and I did triathlons, and I coached cross country. And so I was very, very physically active. And that's, you know, in my teens and 20s was when all of this kind of started, you know, the neck, you know, the hip, the back. So that started. And again, there was always something to kind of explain that. You know, it's overtraining, or, you know, you're overdoing it, or, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It evened out again in my late 20s. I should mention that I did have, nobody found this prior, and I can't say with utmost certainty, but I was diagnosed with atrial septic defect when I had my first job out of graduate school. So, you know, I know with Lyme, it's more like the,
yeah, it's a great mimicker.
Yeah. So I don't know. I've done research on that, but I've also heard it can cause things like that as well. So anyways, when I was 27, I had open heart surgery to repair that. I, you know, had some difficulty with that. And then when I was pregnant with my daughter, again, the symptoms return because of the stress of pregnancy. So this is kind of, again, in hindsight, looking back, it's like, that's the challenge with this. You know, there's certain things that are happening in your life and the lifestyle that you have that it's so easy for a physician or other people to just kind of excuse away the symptoms until they get really bad, you know, really bad. And then the problem with that is, they can't figure it out. It's so bad. You know, you go to specialist, nobody can figure it out. And then you're labeled as a psychiatric issue.
Right.
Which is what happened to me, which is exactly what happened to me.
Wow. So you went from having all of these just random things your whole life, and now looking back, it kind of tells you that you may have had it since birth. So yeah. When was it that it just got so bad that you had to start figuring out what was wrong with you, and what were your symptoms at that time?
I would say, okay, so my father passed away. Let me see. I gotta do the math here. It was right about 2012. I would have been 42 at the time. And again, being 42, here we go, you know, as a woman, it's like, oh, you're entering perimenopause, or it's your hormones. I was starting to once again, what was happening is like severe insomnia, night sweats to the point where not just changing my sheets once, but like several times during the night. I mean, like just completely drenched. I began to have interstitial cystitis. My bladder, where I that then started, where I was having extreme bladder discomfort. I was basically urinating every 15 minutes all night long. Wow. So I went to the, you know, typical thing. I go to specialists. I went to a urologist. I don't even know where else to go with this, because it's still hard talking about it.
I'm sure it is. So it's not a
there were definite clear physical things going on. And the problem was, and I think this is the problem, is like you have these symptoms. And you go to a doctor, and you go to a specific doctor, and the problem is with Lyme is that it's so comprehensive, right? So you go to doctor, and they hone in on the urinary tract issues. Okay, I did have UTIs, but then it was like I had symptoms of UTIs, but I didn't have UTIs, and I So when I saw the urologist, of course, he's going to say, well, it's your bladder. Something's wrong with your bladder. They don't, for whatever reason, because there's not enough training or awareness of Lyme, they're going to hone in on that and treat specifically that. But the problem with that is, as we know, it's like we treat that, but then that doesn't go away, because Lyme then proceeds to go to a different organ or hide in the body, you know, in biofilm. And so, you know, I had surgery for the bladder inflammation. I had all kinds of medications that are now actually considered, you know, there's lawsuits now. I can't even remember the name of the one, right? Elmeron or what, the bladder, I'm trying to remember, where they, it's like an installation where they fill with the medication. So I had surgery for that. And then, you know, it just continued to progress, you know, from 2012 onward. And it just progressively got more and more worse. And, you know, as we know with Lyme, not only the organs, specific parts of your body, well, you know, it began to spread to my brain. So of course I'm going to present as mental health when I start having memory loss, you know, heart palpitations, which are actually also physical, right? I mean, we know Lyme does that as well, but you know, it just began to present, because it wasn't treated to the core of the source. I was going to specialist. It began to be identified as psychiatric, that, you know, I was malingering, I was attention seeking. I had gone to the ER. I feel like I'm sort of rambling. So I had gone to the ER several times with my husband because he had witnessed what he thought was a stroke. Of course, by the time with Ball's palsy, of course, by the time you get to the ER and they, you know, you get in, things kind of calm down, which is kind of what I hear a lot. You know, when I talk to people, it's like they have these severe symptoms and it's very scary. But then by the time they go to the hospital, then it's treated as though you have stress or you're depressed or,
They're always picking apart the different symptoms instead of looking at the whole picture.
The whole picture.
Exactly.
So as far as for me, you know, we're looking at, I had seen obviously a gynecologist, a urologist, nephrologist, neurologist,
psychologist,
gastroenterologist. I saw them all.
Yeah, if it ends with gist, you did it.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think there was one that I didn't see.
Yes.
Endocrinologist. I saw that person too. Several of them.
Yeah. Yeah. See. So the issue with them, like you're saying, is that a urologist is going to look at your bladder. You know, it's going to look at your urinary tract, and that's all they're going to look at. And all they know, because they can't fix anything there, really, all they can do is try to manage whatever. If it's some infection, they can kind of throw in, you know, some antibiotic at it or some anti-inflammatory if it seems inflamed. And so that's all the scope and understanding that they have. They're not going to look beyond, you know, their specialty, you know, which is what each one of these need to do in order to be able to look at something that affects the whole system like Lyme, but none of them are trained to do that because they're all so focused on, you know, gynecology, you know, looking at the female organ, or nephrology. So all I'm doing is looking at the kidney, you know, and that's it. Yeah. So, so that's what's frustrating.
And I think what's a real red flag, and, you know, I've helped people online that, you know, where they're starting to go to specialists, and it's like, that's kind of a red flag. If there's no big picture there, other than, you know, you're going to doctor, and they come up with a diagnosis, but there's really no relief from it. They're just treating it based on the symptom presentation, not what the actual illnesses. And you know, unfortunately, as is the case with me and other people that I've talked to, is, you know, once you get treated like a psychiatric patient and you start taking some of these psychiatric medications, that actually makes it worse. And so it's really upsetting, because you know, I think about, you know, obviously we don't have time for me to share my whole story, but I think back to how I was treated as a psychiatric patient, and thinking about other people that I was in treatment with. And I think, wow, you know, these providers, it almost should be a standard protocol that they should run a tick-borne Lyme test because of the symptoms that a person can be presented. Now, of course, this is not to say that somebody does not have a mental health issue, because I shared that's actually my training. I was a school counselor and a psychotherapist before this got really bad for me. So that, you know, so that's my training, and I understand that there are people who truly have that, but I think that's pretty much a rarity. And of course, I'm biased, but I think there's more often than not, there's a lot of physical issues surrounding mental illness, specifically with tick-borne and tick-borne illness, Lyme disease, is that, you know, I think about these people I was with, and I think, wow, you know, I wonder how many of them
had Lyme.
Do not know that they have this, and they're being treated this way. And it's like dampening their spirit and their hope, you know, and that's really hard to swallow sometimes for me when I think about it.
It's almost like it should be that if you've gone to three or more specialists, that, you know, you need to look at something beyond the little area of focus. You need to look at a broader picture. And then obviously Lyme, you know, which is one of the, I would say, the fastest growing infectious disease, you know, in the United States, you would want to look at that. And you, I think you're, absolutely right. I mean, and that's, doctors tend to do that when they don't want to deal with you anymore. So now you got a psychiatric issue. So let's put her on medication. So, or he on medication so that they won't bother
leave
us,
us
anymore.
Alone. Yeah,
just so leave us alone. Yeah, and that takes away your power. Yeah, as a patient, because now you're not actively engaged in your own solution anymore, because you've been dampened. You know, your mental, spiritual, and thought patterns, all of that's been dampened by medication.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, to the listeners out there, that if they go to a specialist after specialist and they go to a handful of them and they're just being picked apart like you were, I think that should be our red flag. Hey, look, maybe this is Lyme. Maybe we need to look at this instead of just putting Band-Aids on all these other things when the root problem is not being discovered.
And as you know, Dr. Horowitz, you know, when he's come up with this questionnaire, you know, he terms it multi-systemic, meaning, you know, it's a red flag. If you're having this symptom, you're having gastrointestinal issues, you know, you're having sweats, hormonal imbalance, you know, all these different urinary, I mean, it's multi-systemic. So if you present all things, it's not going to do any, I shouldn't say it's not going to do any good. I feel like it's not going to be helpful to just jump from provider to provider, provider. And then also you're labeled as physician shopping, which is also what can happen and can be very traumatizing for people, which is what happened to me, as well as, you know, other people I've met. You know, it's like, well, you're looking for the diagnosis you want. No, I'm just trying to figure out what's happening. I have no control over what's happening with my body. And it's my right to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, if no one has helped you, why should you stay with somebody that's not helping you? Why wouldn't you go somewhere else? I mean, that just makes sense.
Right. And the more doctors you see, the more they're going to say, you know, this person's a hypochondriac. They just want to find something that's wrong with them. And, you know, we start to believe that we are when we keep going and nobody will give us our diagnosis of what's really going on with us. It is a mental issue. It really does affect us that way. And it's very sad. It's very sad that that's what happens.
Yeah.
So how did you get out of that? I mean, here you're on medication and you're thinking that, you know, it's something going on in my head and I'm mentally broken. You know, how do you break away from that?
Well, that's a good question. And I think, you know, as much as, you know, we were just referencing about your spirit being dampened when you're on psychiatric medication, which is true, and I was, but there was still like this little voice inside of me saying something's not right, even though everybody, you know, including my family, because they trust doctors too, you know, were convinced I was mentally unwell, which again, you said, you know, when you do have Lyme, obviously there are mental issues, but I don't know. I feel like it was still like that inner voice kind of like telling me, and I made the decision to stop all of these drugs, obviously against any recommendation of anybody in my family, as well as any prescribing doctor. And I also had a family stressor going on. And I don't know. I think here's the thing about people don't realize how strong their capacity to be strong when they have to be strong. And this is not to minimize people when they have Lyme, that they can't pull it together, because you do need other people. But I feel like without sharing all of it, it was like enough with the medication. I mean, I literally had a garbage bag full, I'm not kidding, a garbage bag full of psychiatric medication that were all tried on me, that I tried, that made me worse. Mm-hmm. And so I had to just make the decision, this is it. I can't do this anymore. I have to be there for, and it was a person in my family because of the issue going on. I don't know if you call that a higher power. I don't know if you call that, and or if you call that a person's intuition, will to live, their strength. I don't know. I called upon all of that. Not everybody is able to do that. I obviously had different resources, but I also, you know, came with a lot of opposition. But, you know, shortly after, I said, I had seen a therapist. I had found a therapist who I still occasionally talk to every now and then to check in. And I, you know, I had almost given hope on all mental health providers, all physicians, because of the way I was treated. But it was because of me deciding enough is enough. I need to just figure this out, keep listening to my inner voice that something else is going on. She was the one person who said to me, this is not normal. There is something physical going on. And she continued to tell me that. And it was, you know, you begin to heal when you're hurt. And she heard me and she believed me. And she said, this is not a psychiatric issue. This is not normal. You need to keep finding somebody that will, you need to keep searching and finding a doctor who's going to believe you and find out what is going on. And unfortunately, she had to move out of state, but I took what she said to me seriously. And I finally found a doctor, you know, shortly after, it was March of 2017 that I said, enough is enough. I'm not taking any of these drugs anymore. And it was July of 2017. I had seen an osteopathic doctor for the first time. Was my first initial appointment. And she asked me, she said, what are your top three concerns that you're dealing with? I said, joint pain, terrible insomnia, and like just horrible depression. And she just said, just with those three things, she said to me, have you been tested for Lyme disease?
Wow.
And it was like, no, I don't believe so. But it was like, how is it that maybe because of her training, right? Mm-hmm. But all she did was hone in on three things. I didn't even get into all my history with her, you know, all the different specialists I saw. It was in that brief few minutes of the initial appointment that she was able to basically make a hypothesis that she probably had Lyme disease.
And how do all these other doctors miss it? That it's, there's just not enough knowledge, you know, when it comes to mostly Western medicine. They just, they're not trained. They don't want to be trained. I don't know. But that's
Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly.
And I, you know, regardless of whether I had it in my childhood, I mean, here's the thing. I gave a presentation at the state level to therapists because I thought it was important because of how it does get misdiagnosed as psychiatric. I said, you know, if you're sitting with a client, again, as we talk about these red flags, right, of all these things and they're going to doctor, I said, the other thing is you take a look at their lifestyle. Are they a marathon runner, cross-country runner, cyclist? Are they outdoors? It's like, nobody asked me those questions, right? And it was really obvious to, obviously in hindsight, you know, it's really obvious to me because I was always outside. I went to camps. I ran cross country, which is basically, as you know, I mean, you're in woods and trails and mm-hmm. who knows, maybe I got bit a couple times. Who knows? You know, I mean, I, you know, but.
Did you yourself know anything about Lyme prior to getting your diagnosis?
It's interesting that you say that, because my father, my parents had a campground up north, because as I mentioned, my mother was from upper Wisconsin. And my father was diagnosed with Lyme disease, but he, they caught it really early, because when he was at the campground, he, of course, had the classic bullseye rash.
Okay.
And I don't ever recall having that. So, and that's actually more common than that, right? And okay.
Yeah.
So I knew about it from that. And that was my, I was in my 20s. And then, you know, when I mentioned my symptoms were getting really bad right when I was around 40, I, in addition to all these specialists, I started researching different naturopathic doctors. And I remember going to some of these naturopathic doctors' offices who missed the diagnosis for me, but were advertising themselves as specialists for Lyme disease, because I would see the flyers and I would see things out in their offices about Lyme disease. So I, you know, so I would see it there, but I never really, connected, because again, it was just like, you know, it would start in one area. It would be, you know, again, like the night sweats and my hormones and my thyroid being off, and then it was this. And so it's like, in hindsight, I'm like, wow, it was so obvious. But
so there was still, even though they were naturopathic, there was still kind of symptom chasing, but with natural things.
Yeah, they were running all kinds of tests, but they were really, in my early 40s, they were really attributing it to female hormonal, you know, issues.
And how are we to know that that's not our problem? You know, we're well, known to listen
to these. I feel like, no disrespect to you, but I feel like when you get diagnosed with this, you know, I joke because I have a friend who's, I have a couple of friends who also have this Lyme disease. And it's sort of like you become like a doctor by proxy, because you're, you know, all my nights of terrible insomnia when it was at its worst, I'm doing all these research, listening to all these presentations by the, you know, well-respected Lyme doctors. I'm trying to make sense out of it. When I go to a doctor, I'm like trying to explain it to them. It's like, I think we all need like a doctorate degree by proxy, because that's what happens, and you almost have to be that way in order to get better.
Yeah.
You have to understand it. I mean, it gets a little, you know, some of these books I've read, and I, you know, it's a little meticulous, like it's a little bit over my head at times, but you have to
be your own advocate and learn about it. And like you said, I've always joked that I could be a doctor, a pharmacist, and a psychiatrist.
Yes.
I just don't have the schooling for it.
That's exactly it. Life experience.
Yeah. And it's sad, because we grow up thinking that we go to the doctor and we just believe what they tell us. You know, for you, you believe that something's wrong with you mentally. So,
well, and I think it's our generation. Like, I don't know, obviously, how old you two are, but I think it's a generational thing too. I mean, maybe not necessarily, but I think, you know, growing up, it was like, it was instilled in you that you respect authority, and authority meaning your teachers, your parents, physicians, people of high, you know, who are distinguished, high caliber, educated.
Right.
So I know that's how I was raised.
Right. And me as well. So once you got your diagnosis, what did your treatment protocol look like?
Well, that was pretty complicated. Because I, because, you know, now I guess the term you're supposed to use is this tick-borne illness, mostly because most people who have Lyme disease, you know, what is it? How many percent, 50% have, you know, more than two co-infections or two or three co-infections. My treatment in the beginning was, first of all, focusing on anti-inflammation with the gut. So it was taking a look at what my diet was, and revamping the diet, meaning, you know, eliminating eliminating inflammatory foods, meaning dairy, sugar, gluten, corn, soy. Okay, now I have to be honest. I have not really been a meat person ever, and I converted to vegan initially, but now I'm more plant-based. It is really hard to do that, especially when everybody around you, right, is eating all these things that you enjoy. Now I don't really miss it. Like, I'm Italian, right? So like bread is like, you know, that's like a staple, right? So you know, they focused a lot on that and healing the gut. And so before I was, so how I was educated by my Lyme doctors is, and I also worked with a nutritionist that I paid to see outside of the Lyme doctors, in addition to the nutrition part, because that's where you have to start first, I believe, is the nutrition and healing your body naturally. And so I had to take bone broth, you know, probiotic, lots of things to heal the gut, because my gut was so off. I had so many issues. So that simultaneously with the initial, I would say, 6 months of antibiotics, they cycled the antibiotics. I was also on an anti-malaria drug, Alinia, for a while, but that was pretty costly. So it was really hardcore antibiotics. In addition to herbals, a lot of herbals, there was, I know they have different protocols, and I don't want to mistalk, because I'm not sure if I was on the Buhner protocol, or I was on a combination of a herbal protocol, because I, you know, we were joking in the beginning, it's sort of like you got this chart, and it's like, you can't take this with that, and then every 2 hours, and so, I mean, it was like this complex, so it was a lot of different herbal medicines, supplements to help with nutritional deficiencies that I had that the Lyme had created. So it was a combination of that. So you know, it was, you know, when I was at my worst, I would say it was, I fear to say 50, probably close to 50 different things trying to manage all that.
In a day?
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know some of the extensive protocols that I do, so I'm not going to say that that's a lot, because that happens. You know, when you're trying to, when you go after the pathogen, and it's never just one pathogen, you know, so you go after a number of different pathogens at the same time, because if you kill one, then the other ones are opportunistic, and because they kind of battle between each other. So you kill one, and now that gives space and room for the other one to grow and kind of claim more territory. So you gotta go after all of them in essence, in a way. And then at the same time, you know, as you're killing, yeah, you know, they're releasing all these chemicals and toxins and things. So now you gotta bind all of that, and then in addition to that, you got to make sure that all the eliminatory pathways are open, that your lymphatic is flowing, and you know, and then also support the hormonal, so you have the energy to be able to deal with it, and also that you nutritionally are okay, and so it's all these factors you got to juggle all at the same time, yeah. You know, so yeah.
And some men have Lyme brain and can't remember half of it.
yes, and I think the other challenge that I had, and I know that many do, is it's like you start this really complex protocol, like you mentioned, in terms of like addressing everything. I can't repeat everything you said, but I know what you're saying. It's like, then you go back to your doctor in a couple of months and it's like, oh, looks like we got to switch it up again. And so it's like you're saying, mind brain, it's like, okay, another chart, another way to try to manage this. And I think people who don't have it, or doctors who are not trained in this, they don't understand the scope of how overwhelming that is for a person, you know, to be just, and to this day, when I go to my Lyme doctor, I mean, he saved me. Well, I see two, and they both saved me. I was in really bad shape. And I still, every time I go, I mean, I consider myself pretty much remission. I mean, there's a little tweaks here and there. I still just feel completely overwhelmed, because it's still a lifelong thing. And anytime any of those processes or things in your body are not working properly because of what Lyme does to the body, you know, you constantly have to be on top of it and taking a look at how it's affecting you based on, you know, who knows, other illnesses that you get, stressors in your life, you know. So it's like every time you go to the doctor, it's like, oh, here we go again, you know.
Right. I always stay kind of on red alert.
Hypervigilant. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, which is important. Like you said, it is a life-changing disease, I think. And I'm so glad that they started you out with your gut health and your nutrition, because that's so important. And so many people just don't understand how important what you feed your body does to your body. It can, you know, make your journey so much shorter than it needs to be if you can get your diet and your gut in order, I think.
Well, and I consider myself one of the fortunate people to still be here based on how bad it was for me. And this is not to minimize that it is truly a physical thing and you have to do all those things. And I also did exercise and infrared sauna. I know other people do different frequency, you know, there's different frequency therapies or the hyperbaric oxygen chamber. My Lyme doctor had that. I'm not quite sure why I never was prescribed that. But anyways, I think for me, the final picture, and again, I got to be careful how I say this, but and also because of my training, there is a huge emotional part to healing this. And it's part of the picture, in that you can keep taking all the supplements and all the medications and follow the protocol, but there's some real deep healing that you have to do, that you have to be brave enough to do, to heal from it and to continue to fight it. That's just as hard, if not harder, than the actual physical treatment of the disease.
Well, you've gone through this whole journey. You know, it's a traumatic journey, traumatic, you know, steps that are, that, I mean, experiences that you're going through. And so even though you may have gotten rid of the infection, you're still dealing with the trauma of mm-hmm. this whole event. And if you're not healing the trauma, the emotional, you know, the mental and the spiritual component of that whole journey, you're still going to hold that energy of that disease, even though the pathogen is not there.
I totally agree. And for me, you know, I it's really hard when you're not feeling well. I just really think it's important for whoever's listening. And again, this is not to minimize that there is huge physical parts to the healing of it. But I agree with you. It's like unresolved trauma, healing from that medical trauma, the way that you were treated, the way that you may have been treated by family and friends. And in speaking of that, myself as well as other people that I know, you know, to try to make it into a positive here, you know, it really forces you to look around your circle of social support. Not everybody can do this because some people are in relationships that they can't necessarily leave. But it's taking a look at who you're surrounding yourself with, you know, what I call kind of like your clan, right? People that are these people that support you? Are these people that are going to help you be your best self? And for me, fortunately, you know, there were several friends that really dropped off. And this is kind of a common thing. But looking back, those friends maybe probably weren't the best friends for me. And it was a blessing in disguise because it forced me to be a little bit uncomfortable and to really find my own niche of people where not only was there positivity, but that I could also escape from the label of having this chronic illness, you know, and for me, that was going to the gym. I've always been an athlete. And so I just took that all in. I went to a gym and I really, you know, went to classes and got out of my comfort zone, talked to people, and people were very positive and helpful. And again, not everybody has that. And I'm not saying go to the gym, but I'm saying like evaluating who's in your social circle and who. And I hope it doesn't come across as elitist, but it comes across as like self-care. Like I believe you will not get better until you have some degree of positivity in your life. And so if you're surrounded by people who are continually questioning you, not listening to you, not validating you in some way, that presents as a secondary trauma. So not only are you trying to deal with healing from Lyme disease on a physical level, but then you're also, you know, immersed with people who are treating you this way. Hence, very important to figure out how do I create a circle of people that are going to help me rise above this.
Right. Your safe space. Exactly. And mm-hmm. I think that people are just as toxic to us as Lyme is.
Yes.
So who you surround yourself with is very important. And like you said, you do really learn who your true friends are when you're dealing with something like this that, you know, for years you can't explain to them what's wrong with you. You can't tell them what's wrong with you, but something's wrong with you and they're going to believe you. Those are the kind of people that you want to surround yourself with. And I agree 100% that it's your mind, body, and your spirit that all need to recover from it. Absolutely.
Well, I would love to get into some of the protocol, but I'm wondering almost, I mean, because I think with this, us chatting, I think that the most important is for people to really understand the emotional aspect of it and the mental aspect. I'm almost don't want to kind of dilute that message in a way, because mm-hmm. that is such an important and powerful message to understand the emotional journey of this and how important it is to heal mentally and emotionally from the journey in itself. And then also, you know, the question is, you know, you have two people, they're both bit by tick, and one gets, you know, Lyme disease and the other one does not. And I'm not so sure about tick-borne using that as a label, because, you know, it can be mosquito, it can be deer fly, it can be, you know, a spider bite, you know, so I don't know why you would kind of think that tick-borne is better than other. But anyway, so, yeah, you have then these two people, you know, why does one get Lyme and the other one does not? So then you can look then at, you know, childhood traumas, you can look at, you know, mm-hmm. different, obviously, you know, genetic SNPs, you know, chemical exposure and all that. But I think the emotional component of where you are at when you get bit or when you're exposed, I think that's probably one of the biggest drivers. You know, so if you're dealing with traumatic past or traumas at that is probably stronger of a driver than a lot of these other chemicals and things.
And I agree with you, and having talked to people in my own background without getting into all of it, and it really boils down to the immune system. So if you've experienced trauma, multiple traumas, but more specifically, you know, we all go through trauma, but like very significant, very impactful trauma that hasn't been processed, that gets stored in the body and it weakens the immune system and it can cause havoc. And so I totally agree with that. And that's been my experience in talking with people about it. And in my observation about people who I feel are doing better, and the reason why they're doing better partly is because they're willing to dig deep and take a look at the spiritual, emotional part of this. What's the missing piece here? What am I still holding in my body that's preventing me? You know, whether it's, I don't believe I'm going to get well, based on trauma, I don't deserve to get well. You know, all of these are kind of unconscious things that can happen when somebody's had trauma and abuse in their past. So it's very complex.
And it's interesting because I was just chatting with a patient doing a Zoom call in New Zealand earlier today. And this is somebody that, I mean, she probably knows everything and anything about any kind of test that you need to run, all these specialized tests, stool tests, Oates tests, mycotox, tick-borne. I mean, she knows it all, and she's done it all. She owns her own business, professional, very smart, very astute, and every possible supplements. I mean, she had the best of the best supplements, and she gone through all of it, and none of it is really moving the needle in any shape or form. And so, then looking back, so kind of analyzing it and then looking back and seeing the untouched, gold, sort of saying, that's what you want to look at. What territory have you not covered? And that is then looking at the traumatic journey, of all of this, or looking at the trauma that kind of initiated this whole process, and that had not fully been dealt with and addressed. But you've been so good at the supplement and the physical component, but it hadn't moved, because you hadn't looked at the spiritual emotional aspect that is an underlying factor, and because of that trauma, she didn't feel like she deserved to get well.
Yep. You're not even aware of it, because it's so deep. And just to comment more about that, I think the other thing that happens is, when you have this, everything, your whole world, I mean, what you go through, it just shakes it up, because you have to, because people bail out on you. They're not your friends anymore. You can't work, all these things. And so you lose your identity. And so it's like a huge loss. And you have to go through those stages of grief and loss. And you have to sit in the ugly, but then you have to figure out, how do you redefine yourself? Meaning, how do you, I hate sounding like a, I don't want to sound like a therapist, but you use the term radical acceptance. It's sort of like, okay, this is what it is. I have this illness that many people don't understand. There's no cure. However, I'm grateful, gratitude. Again, I don't want to simplify the how difficult this is to heal, but as we're talking about the spiritual and emotional piece and looking at all those facets, those final pieces are about addressing unhealed or unreached territory, as you would say. And also redefining yourself, reinventing yourself, which means you have to go through stages of grief and loss. And even when you're in remission, you're still going to go through that. There's still days, I can guarantee you, after I have this talk with you, probably tomorrow, I will say something to somebody about, you know, I'll be angry again about it, or, you know, I'll cry about it, or, but that's part of it. That's part of it. But when you do that and you sit in it and you're able to then kind of shift the focus on the gratitude piece and not now what can I do? How can I be better? You know, how changing the way that you look at it, the way that you talk to yourself, all of those things can help you continue to rise above it.
And the key, the key is to not always thinking that you have to present as good and happy and joyful and all, but to be okay and feel safe and kind of going down in that deeper, you know, where it is, where you feel the pain, and when there is your shadow self, or where, you know, you're the destruction of your old ego or old self, and, you know, going through that whole process and be okay with it and sit in it and observe it and, mm-hmm. and allow it to take place. And then from there, you know, your new, you know, the Phoenix rising can take place, you know, but not to try to pretend that things are good when they're not good, and be okay with, you know, being in that, you know, being in that tough spot is okay.
Yeah. And we have to be okay with the new us, you know, what, how Lyme changed our lives, because it definitely changes your life in so many ways. And we have to acknowledge that it's okay, and we have to find that sort of like our new place in the world. And you need to do that in order to become okay with it. Yep.
Well, thank you so much for today. This was
awesome. Oh, you're welcome.
This was absolutely wonderful. And I think this is such an important piece for people going through this journey, over and above, you know, protocols and I ate this, or I took these pills, or I did this. Yeah, you know, I think this is really, really important for people to be know that it is an emotional, spiritual journey.
Yeah.
And my hope is, you know, I'm currently not working, although, you know, I have given presentations at the state level trying to educate other mental health professionals, but I think, you know, reaching out, if you know, just another message I want to say to people, because we do need support, and I consider myself very lucky. Not everybody has that. And so, you know, it's helping, you know, people can find people. I am part of a couple groups that they're Lyme literate therapists. And with how things are now in terms of how you can do, you know, online counseling or searching for a therapist, maybe it doesn't even necessarily have to be Lyme. I mean, ideally it should be Lyme, because they know, you know, usually somebody who's doing
better. Yeah.
Somebody who's a Lyme literate therapist, again, I'm making assumption, but more often than not, they have Lyme and they've been working through it. And so they understand it. But if you can't find that, it's finding somebody who has a background in chronic illness so they understand and can validate you. Because, again, you have to do the work, the spiritual work, going in, diving deep into unresolved issues. But, again, I don't want to downplay the importance of having, you know, as I mentioned before, the importance of having some support, because when you're finally heard and validated, that's right when the healing can start, because you build up the strength when you've got that. And there are so many people that I've talked to and who I've read things about where, you know, they don't have that. You know, if they don't have it in their family or they don't have it, it's like sometimes, you know, if you don't have that, it's going to be that much more challenging to try to figure out, how do I do this by myself? I mean, ultimately you have to do it by yourself, but how you find some way to have some sense of community, whether it's a face, you know, Facebook group, a therapist,
a new
group of people, something, because they're going to be what carries you when you're in these deep parts of it and still accept you. Like you said, you know, they're going to accept you.
Right. And it's wonderful that there are so many Facebook groups.
Yes.
And there are, you know, there are good ones and there are bad ones with everything in life. But find one that is positive, that brings you that positive energy, that you feel validated in, and, you know, you feel like you can be vulnerable in, because there are groups out there and everybody needs support. You don't have to go through this alone, because it's hard enough to go through it with support, and then you take it and try to stand on your own, and it's tough. It's really tough. So find that support, therapist, groups, other members, you know, that have line that are going through what you're going through. So super important.
Yeah, and I kind of liken it as, you know, when you lift weights, you know, let's say you do bench press, you know, for people that you know, work out. You know, if you have a spotting partner, you dare to lift heavier and you dare to push yourself a little bit more. If you have somebody standing there, and you know that when you're in trouble, when you are dealing with tougher things, somebody can reach in and grab onto that bar and help you. So having somebody
there. I like
there,
that.
Yeah. I like that analogy too. Yeah, that's perfect. Perfect.
Good. Well, thank you so much. This was wonderful. Thank you.
You're really welcome. Was. Thank you for
Please
being
reach so. Out if you any other questions.
Yes, where can they find these Lyme literate therapists? Where is there a website? Is it a are you a group, or I mean, what should people search for?
Well, that's a good question. Usually a lot of people will post on some of these Lyme groups that they need a Lyme literate therapist. And sometimes people have resources for that because they've either accessed somebody who has accessed it. So that's one way. That might be a little bit more challenging. Another way is, like, you know, there are certain websites that you can do your own search on for, and again, this is the challenge. The Lyme literate therapists are few and far between. I'm not saying you can't find them, but, like, that's why I mentioned the chronic illness. So, for example, like, Psychology Today is basically where a lot of therapists will advertise their services, and you can do a search with, like, presenting issue, and so therefore that would be when you would highlight chronic illness. Again, unlikely there's going to be something specific to Lyme, but that would be a starting point, is finding somebody who has a chronic illness specialty, because who knows, they might know somebody. Mm-hmm. Okay, the other thing is your doctor. My doctors were really careful not to actually refer me. I had to do, you know, I don't see a Lyme literate therapist now, but, like, I know there's been people who, when they see their doctor, that doctor may know of somebody. And oftentimes it's sort of just word of mouth. Like, so when you're in these groups of people, whatever, and you start talking about your story, you know, I feel like when you start that process rolling, like you say, I am going to heal from this, I'm going to get better, I'm going to do these things, I sort of feel like you put that energy out there, and you're going to do your research, and through word of mouth or this research, you will come across somebody.
Yeah, I think word of mouth is a great way too.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, I Thank think you. That's an awesome wrap right there.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much.
So when can you just, I know you're still recording, so, but I was just curious, like, where this is, like, presented, or where people listen to this, like, is this actually on Facebook, or where is it that you're actually
you can like find it? Yeah, you can find it on pretty much any podcast platform.
Okay.
I can send you the link to it because yours will go live next Wednesday. And so
I would like to listen to the other ones too, but yeah.
I will send you the link to it that you can listen to it. It's Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carl Felt.
So okay.
You can find it on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Google Play.
Okay, so anybody has access to it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just type in if you want to, you can just type in, go to iTunes, type in my last name, and it'll pop up.
I'll do that, but I would also appreciate the link.
Absolutely. I will send it to you.
Great. Well, have a wonderful rest of the evening.
Okay, you too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care, Anna. Thanks. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carl Felt.